Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Text us this morning, 51551, email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we're at Today with Claire. But first this morning, to the announcement last evening that the AstraZeneca vaccine is now only recommended for people over the age of 60. We'll discuss in a moment what that means for the vaccine rollout and our prospects of a wider reopening of society. But I'm joined first by Dr. Niamh O'Connell, who's a consultant haematologist and director at the National Coagulation Centre at St. James Hospital. Good morning, Dr. O'Connell, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Claire.
So the first thing I'll say to you is, given the text that we've been receiving this morning, there's a lot of concern around the country. Will you explain to us why the decision was made and the risk-benefit analysis that informed the decision?
Thank you, Claire. I'd be very happy to do that because I know people have heard a lot of the headlines over the last day or so, and I can understand why people might be a little bit concerned. I suppose the first thing to say is that all of the vaccines that have been approved in Ireland for COVID-19 are effective, and they do prevent the most serious versions of this disease, which, as we all know, particularly in people in the older age groups and for people who have pre-existing medical conditions, can really result in people being hospitalised, becoming very ill, and in a number of cases, obviously, being fatal for those people. So this is a very serious illness. We need to prevent it, and we have very effective vaccines. There is always the potential for unusual and rare side effects, and these typically come to light not necessarily in the clinical trials of tens of thousands of people, but more when they're rolled out to millions of people, as has been the case for AstraZeneca. I want to keep it in context because the immune-mediated clotting conditions that have been diagnosed occur extremely rarely. But the different age groups and risk cohorts for the COVID-19 disease have different risk-benefit analysis, as you alluded to. And it's really that difference that has created this impetus to put an age cutoff for the recommendation for the AstraZeneca vaccine.
But people who are listening this morning who are in the 60 to 69-year-old cohort, they're asking, because they're getting in touch with us, why has 60 been chosen as the cutoff point?
Well, it's really kind of taking the most cautious approach because we know that above the age of 60, you're really still at very high risk of having severe COVID-19 disease if you're unfortunate to contract it. And you may well end up in hospital. You'll have a significant risk of having a severe illness, having a clotting complication if you're hospitalized, and maybe even dying. So for you, if you get this AstraZeneca vaccine, you're protected from that very real and serious risk of disease and death. They've chosen death and ICU admission as being the kind of hard endpoints. You know, it would even be more beneficial if you took into account the side effects of being hospitalized or having long COVID and these long-lasting effects of COVID afterwards. And that has then to be balanced against this very rare immune-mediated clotting event, which, to be honest, appears at the moment to be more prevalent in the younger age groups.
And it's 4 in a million, isn't that right?
Yeah, so there are estimates at the moment of the reported rates. The UK figures would be 1 in 250,000, which is about 4 in a million. Some European countries have reported a little bit higher than that, so 1 in 100,000. But that's much less than the risk of you having severe COVID-19 disease if you're in the over 60s age group or you have an underlying medical condition.
Okay, so it seems like it's a very cautious decision that has been taken.
I think you see, when you come down the age groups, if you go into the age groups that are less than 60, and in particular people who are otherwise healthy, who don't have any predisposing health conditions, there, the benefits are still there for the AstraZeneca vaccine, but they are a little bit less in comparison to the risks then of this very rare immune-mediated clotting issue. And the advantage we have in Ireland is that we do have a variety of different vaccines available. So we have the lucky position of being able to offer a different vaccine potentially to those younger, healthy people, where potentially they might have a slightly increased risk of this rare adverse event.
Let's talk about this adverse event then, the rare blood clots. They present themselves, don't they, at a certain time period after you've had the vaccine. So just can you explain to people what they need to be aware of and when?
Absolutely. So the first thing to say is that it's very common for people in the first 3 days after any vaccine to have symptoms such as mild headache, fever, chills, fatigue, aches and pains, and they can be managed by rest and taking some paracetamol at home without any concerns. If, however, people develop a new severe headache or have a persistent worsening headache beyond day four, particularly if that headache is associated with any weakness of an arm or leg or confusion or blurred vision or seizures, those folks need to get to the emergency department promptly and be evaluated. Also, people could look out for things like severe chest pain, tummy pain, anything like bruising or pinprick bruises at a site away from where the vaccine was given, or shortness of breath. Typically, if this rare immune-mediated clotting event occurs, it occurs after day four, having had the vaccine 4 days previously, and typically up to about 14 days after the vaccine. If you're beyond 14 days after the first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine and you're feeling fine, I think there's a very low chance that you'll have any problems, and I wouldn't be worried.
And that's important for people who have had that first dose. They're waiting for their next dose, whenever that might be. You're saying to them, if you haven't had any of the adverse effects that you've just described, you're okay to go and have the second dose of AstraZeneca.
Yeah, and what the recommendations are that if you are someone who is under 60 but with a health condition that increases your chances of severe COVID-19 disease, that you should have that second dose on schedule at 12 weeks. If you're an otherwise healthy person under the age of 60, they're going to extend the interval to 16 weeks. That's, again, out of just an abundance of caution. We know that people have some protection after the first dose, which is brilliant because they're protected. And that protection lasts beyond 12 weeks, probably up to at least 20 weeks. What the 16-week interval does is it just gives a bit of extra time to see what's happening, number one, with how people are doing with the second dose of AstraZeneca in places like the UK. So far, there's no evidence that having a second dose of AstraZeneca is associated with this rare adverse event. There have been no reports so far. And the second thing is that some countries are doing a mix of different vaccines with a different vaccine for the second dose. And I think more information will come over the coming months. And stretching that interval for the second dose to 16 weeks just allows us to gather that information and evidence. And it means then that we can just logistically look at what vaccines we have available at the time and just give those out in a sensible way to try and cover as many people as we possibly can.
So people who've had the first AstraZeneca dose and are maybe reluctant to have the second one, they don't have the option, certainly yet, of mixing and matching the vaccines that they're taking.
No, and we're waiting to get some additional information. Theoretically, it might even be an advantage, but we don't know that for certain. There are studies ongoing and there will be evidence available. Okay. And I think, yeah, one of the things that is brilliant about our setup here in Ireland is that the HPRA and NIAC have very good links into the other regulators and the other advisory committees in other European countries. So we will get that information promptly when it's available.
Yeah, and on that point, Seamus in Dublin has been on to us to say the cutoff point in the UK is 29. Why 60 here? At this rate, we'll be in lockdown well into next year.
Well, I think each country has to bear in mind, as I've mentioned, you know, we are balancing risks and benefits. And part of that balance has to do with how much disease you have in your country at the time. Because obviously, if the disease rates go down, then your overall risk of contracting COVID-19 goes down. And then that balance, if you're a young, healthy person, you know, is different to if you had a lot of COVID-19 disease in the community. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is it also depends on what vaccines you have available in your country. So I think each country has to make their own evaluation about how best to use whatever stocks of vaccines they have.
So the UK is very reliant on AstraZeneca, so that might explain why they've taken that age limit, which is different to what we're doing here. Just on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it uses similar technology, doesn't it, to the AstraZeneca vaccine. So could similar problems arise with that one?
Well, I think with any new vaccine or medication, as we're rolling it out to large numbers of people, into the millions of people, then we're always watching out for any safety signals. There have been a number of clots reported with Johnson & Johnson, a small number, only 4 out of 5 million doses. And the regulators are already aware of this and they're watching it very carefully. And equally with the mRNA vaccines, you know, even though, you know, there hasn't been anything particularly about clotting with those, you know, we do need doctors and clinicians to report any adverse events with these vaccines, whether they're they're thought to be linked or not, so that they can be investigated fully. It's difficult in the beginning because initially perhaps you just have a limited picture, and it's only over time as the regulators do the investigation that they can put all of the pieces of the jigsaw together and be sure whether the vaccine is or isn't implicated. In reality, clotting conditions are common. Low platelets can be common after vaccines, all vaccines, not just COVID-19 vaccines. So we need to just investigate all of these reports very carefully.
And what about people who have a history of blood clots? What are you saying to them? I'm sure they're asking you for advice on what they should do.
Absolutely. And they're contacting us, and I don't blame them, to be honest. I think it's really important to know that the mechanism for this complication that's been reported is very different to the kinds of clots that people might have experienced in the past if they'd had a clot with the pill maybe, or after surgery, or because their leg was in a cast. These are an immune response, and the antibodies that are produced activate platelets and cause the clot. There is absolutely no evidence that people who have a past history of a clotting condition, whether they're currently on a blood thinning medicine at the moment or not, have any increase in risk of this immune-mediated problem. So it is a very different mechanism. And so we'd advise them all to take the vaccine that they're offered when their time comes around.
Okay, Dr. O'Connell, thank you very much for that very useful information. I'm joined also by Dr. Dennis McCauley, GP and Chair of the GP Committee at the IMO. Good morning to you, Dennis.
Good morning, Claire.
Dr. Mary Favier on Morning Ireland said this morning that there isn't a GP in the country not bracing themselves for the additional workload of telephone calls on this change. Is that where you and your members are at today?
Well, I suppose, yeah, there's two things. The actual confusion that has arisen will lead to people trying to clarify. Also, we have to then engage with the HSE to try and, we have clear advice now, so we have to try and devise a practical plan to implement that. So there's two issues. Yes, there's the information giving, but there's also the problem definition and the problems sorting out as such.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of text messages from people in their 60s. I'm 67. I won't take AstraZeneca. I'm 69. I won't take it. I'm 63 and we will take it. Are you getting much of that today?
Yesterday and today we were getting a lot of people coming in and asking. You can't really go on anecdotes, but the anecdote yesterday was very positive, even with the actual confusion. I think that in theory, when you look at it logically, if you can, the information they gave yesterday should reassure rather than actually should make people more worried. If anything, the NIAC came out with a very safe statement. They really went for safety.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, but I suppose if you're age between 60 and 70, right, what you hear is this vaccine, we're not going to give it to anyone under the age of 60. We're not going to give it to anyone over the age of 70. But we're going to give it to you guys in that 10-year age bracket. You're the ones who are getting this thing, which we've deemed not safe enough to give to the others.
Yeah, I understand that. Like, I think that argument is a very valid statement. And I suppose then it's our job then to sort of try and personalise it to them to sort of say, like, the journey in the car to get the vaccine is probably much more dangerous than actually getting the vaccine. Like, even whatever your age group, coming from Donegal, if the risk of getting a vaccine is the same as me driving to O'Connell Street and driving back, and you would do that to actually collect a chair. So in a way, you're trying to personalise it to that actual person. And to be honest, yesterday particularly, most of the patients were just very pragmatic about it. Even there's 50-year-old people just ringing to say, well, when am I getting my AstraZeneca vaccine? So your point is very valid, but I think that when the time comes, if they're offered the vaccine, they will make a decision and they'll speak to whoever's giving it, whether it's in the vaccination centre, they'll speak to the person giving it there. If it's their GP in general practice, they will speak to them also.
And the AstraZeneca, it was being rolled out for the high-risk group, wasn't it? So what are those people being told today about when they will get vaccinated? What's the plan?
Well, I think there's a pause. As Mary said this morning, there's a pause. And I think that really we have to, the HSE will remodel, because in a way it's a very simple demographic decision. Above 60, they get AstraZeneca. Below 60, they get another vaccine. But within that group, over 60, there's a very high-risk group, and there's the high-risk group, which classically would be vaccinated be identified and vaccinated by their GP. So we have to look at how this is going to roll out. And I, as I say, no, the plan was, the mRNA vaccines continue over 70 with the GPs, then the high, very high risk to be shared between the vaccination centres and the GPs. But now that'll have to be just completely and utterly looked at again and remodeled as to where the best place to get the relevant vaccines are. Mm-hmm. So it is confusing, of course, but I suppose it is confusing only because the definitions have been changed. So we now have to sit down, and as I say, we have clear advice now, so we have to get a practical plan to implement that.
So it's confusing and it's disruptive. I mean, are you surprised by the decision, and do you think it's the right one?
I must admit, I'm surprised by the number. I thought it was going to be about 50. When you look at the relative risk, but 60 is a very safe. The people over 60, the risk of getting any side effect, a significant side effect with this vaccine is essentially really, really small. It's, as I say, it's almost the same as walking across the street when you look at the over 60s, relative to the benefit that they will get. So it's a very safe decision. Undoubtedly, there are probably more AstraZeneca vaccines than there are people to give it. And I think that will mean that, but in the scheme of things, there's possibly 200,000 to 300,000 vaccines that may not be used out of a 3.9 million sort of supply over the next 3 months. So there's a pause that will undoubtedly affect the amount of vaccine given in the next week or two, because naturally there was no vaccines. I mean, the only vaccines given today are the vaccines given by GPs to the over 70s. So in the scheme of things, I would hope that it will relatively not affect the actual national plan. I think in the next few days, the amount of vaccines will be quite small. I'd say in the next 2 weeks, it will be less than was planned. But as long as the other supplies are there, I would hope that we will catch up then after that. But how we're going to catch up, the exact actual planning of that, will have to be devised today, late into the night maybe.
And I wonder how it's going to impact the timeline, because we know that the plan was to vaccinate 80% of adults by the end of June, and that plan leads me to our reopening plans, because that's one of the metrics that we're relying on to reopen society. I mean, do you think the target can be met now?
Yeah, well, just, as I said, you know, it's maybe two to 400,000 out of a 3.9 million plan, and the plan was a million a month, and we seem to have excess vaccines, you know, for that. So hopefully, Claire, it will not impact. It will have a visual impact for the next 2 days and for the next 2 weeks. But I think overall, the plan, if we can come to a plan on how to roll this out, I think it will be fine. But there's enough vaccines to complete the plan. The articulation of that plan will take a day or two, but it will undoubtedly have an impact today, tomorrow, and maybe this week and next week. But hopefully we will be on track after that.
Okay. I just want to put this one to you before I go. This is from a listener. My GP will be finished vaccinating the over 70s at the end of April. I'll be 70 in early May, so I'll have to sign up on the portal. I'm too scared to get the AstraZeneca. Can I get the Pfizer in May when I reach 70? Otherwise, I think I'll chance not getting vaccinated. What do you say to that?
There's lots in that. I think that naturally, the over 70, because there was a sort of relative practical cutoff date for when you reach 70, there's people who are due to reach 70 in the next week or two. And in theory, what I would sort of say is not to articulate it in that way. I would speak to your GP about the relative safety of the AstraZeneca. At her age, I would probably have a discussion with her, discuss the risk benefit with that person. Hopefully then they would make an actual choice then. I think she's listening to all the negatives, and she probably needs to talk to somebody to get the positives and the negatives so that she can make a practical decision there.
All right, Dr. McCauley, thank you for joining us on the programme. On the line now, Labour Party leader Alan Kelly. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. How confident are you that we'll hit that commitment to have 80% of the adult population vaccinated by the end of June?
It's too early to say. Speaking to people in the HSE, this is a huge disruptor. It's a very cautious approach, extremely cautious, took an awful lot of people by surprise. But I suppose we'll have to deal with it now. My real concerns relate to not just will we hit the targets, but logistically, how we're going to reorientate the vaccine rollout quickly in order to be able to do that. The other issue, which I have a serious worry about, given the fact that my phone has been hopping since yesterday, is issues in relation to hesitancy. And I know you've covered it, Claire.
We're getting it here too. We can't keep up with the messages coming in.
I can't keep up with it on my own phone and WhatsApp, because the volume of people who've been on to me representing themselves or their parents or relations. So I wonder, was that factored in here to the degree that possibly it should have? Because really, this, you know, obviously we 400,000 people in that category from 60 to 69, which is, are the only group now that can get this, given that the mRNA are going to over 70s. But like, the hesitancy issue here means that, you know, we've 800,000 AstraZeneca vaccines approximately coming in over the next number of months. But will they actually be used? Or, I mean, you know, this is a real, real concern. Personally, I would take the AstraZeneca vaccine. I had no issue with that. However, the hesitancy issue, I'm just wondering how much that has been factored in here, because really it is a serious issue. And I do take one...
But does it not show, if you look at it from the other side, that, that NIAC is taking this so seriously because they want to make sure people have confidence in the process, that anything that they see that might be an issue, they're addressing it head on?
I accept that, and I accept their advice. However, you know, the balance of that is the result of the decision is hesitancy in relation to a vaccine we're quite dependent on, along with other vaccines, and also the rollout of the program. And we're saying we have access to other vaccines. We do have access to other vaccines, but the ramping up of that access is going to take a bit of time. And the equation is, will more people get infected because of hesitancy, or the fact that we cannot use this vaccine in a certain group under 60 now? I want to bring your attention to one thing in the conclusion of the report yesterday, and I quote, AstraZeneca can be used in adults aged under 60 years where the benefits clearly outweigh the risk for that individual and the person has made an informed decision based on the understanding of the risk and benefits. That is in the conclusion of the report yesterday when I read it last night, and I took it out because I'd like that to be explained. What does that mean? It's in the conclusion, but for me reading that, it's saying basically sometime possibly they're going to look at the option whereby if people want to take the AstraZeneca under 60, they can. So I'd like somebody from NIAC to come out and maybe explain that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we have been told up to now that there isn't a choice, that you take the one that you're given, essentially. Are you saying that that opens the door to choice?
Well, it's in the document. So I'm asking the question. I'm obviously not qualified scientifically in relation to this, but I did take it out very clearly. Because also, Claire, I think you might have mentioned it early, as I understand it being explained to me, the Janssen vaccine is based on similar technology.
Yeah.
So we could be going down this road again. So there is an issue here about you know, reality and balance and risk and where we're going as regards COVID as an infection, you know, and hesitancy, you know, versus the use of which vaccines and which should be used, which is the, you know, speed trumps perfection. I dare I say it is a crude term, but, you know, you'd have to think about, are we better off to get more vaccines into people, given the very, 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 very low risk? And I very much took that piece out of the conclusion as an open goal as regards potentially we're going to change this advice again in the coming weeks.
And we know now that the HSE is not recording when people refuse vaccines. So we don't know if somebody refuses an AstraZeneca vaccine, for example, but says, I would take another one. So should the HSE record it when someone says they'll take something, just not AstraZeneca?
Well, I personally believe people should take the vaccine they're given and offered. I actually have a large degree of sympathy to the people in the HSE this morning who are trying to reorientate this, given what was decided yesterday. It's going to take a considerable piece of time. I mean, the best people in the world logistically would have a difficulty now, given the variables now that are created as regards cohorts and different vaccines going in different directions, different organisations, my vaccination centres, GPs, all of that. So it's going to be a considerable period of time. I personally wouldn't open the door to doing that, because if you open the door to doing that, I think you elevate hesitancy to another level again.
Okay, just before I let you go, on a separate note, you said the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, needs to have a word about this story that we've been reading over the past 2 days on analysis carried out by the Department of Health into how often Stephen Donnelly is mentioned on their Twitter feed. What do you mean when you say have a word?
I mean, this is embarrassing stuff. I mean, this was in the height of the pandemic, thousands of people getting infected, Claire. You know, I remember at the time, in fairness, Paul Reid was saying we were in a race against time to save lives. And, you know, one of the issues that was being discussed in the Department of Health from the Minister to the Secretary General, and it obviously, from you can see from what the Secretary General said, it actually came from the minister's team, was the amount of mentions on Twitter. I mean, that's just ridiculous and embarrassing stuff. So, you know, as regards priorities, you know, I think the Taoiseach needs to have a chat with the minister to ensure that his priority is always what he should be doing. Personally, I've said for a long time, I think that this minister has too much on his plate, shouldn't be in charge of vaccinations and shouldn't definitely not be in charge of quarantine. But I'd like the Taoiseach to have a word with him and ensure that the priorities of our Minister for Health are well known.
OK, Alan Kelly, Labour Party leader, thank you for joining us. Coming up after the break, Minister Simon Harris.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.